Cooney, reel 3.
I would be very interested indeed to hear a little more about Etaples itself. I have heard a lot about the bullring, but I have no mental picture of what the bullring was like. Could you describe it a bit for me?
I have only a vague recollection. It was really a square, what we call in the army a square, a drill square, a large open place in which various military activities were done. The Romans called it a campus. It was a military training area. Uh-huh. And I have an idea, which may be wrong, that it was more or less circular in shape and pretty large. I suppose it might have been 2 or 3 acres in size. And it was inhabited by squads of half a dozen men doing various exercises, bayonet fighting, rifle training, and so on.
I see. Now, after Etaples, your first position in the trenches was on the Somme, at Happy Valley.
That's right, it was the reserve lines.
Yeah. Do you have any recollections of your first... Well, what were your first recollections of the trenches as you moved into them? Were they what you'd expected?
Oh, yes, I think it was. Yeah. We'd been pretty well trained to expect it.
Yes.
And they were quite definitely what one expected.
But training, I've seen photographs of trenches used for training purposes at home and pictures of trenches on the Western Front, and very often one is impressed by the sort of spick and span fashion of training trenches and the very different article that you actually worked in. I wondered if there
yes,
was that kind
well,
of contrast.
Naturally, they get the trenches in a theatre of war get knocked about. They're not quite as neat as the ones at home. And some of them are dug under difficult circumstances, should we say. But generally speaking, one pretty well expected thing to happen as it did, and we've been trained for it, I think, very well trained for it. It isn't a difficult training. There was nothing very complicated about operating in and out of trenches. It was a very simple matter, actually. You didn't require highly skilled soldiers at that stage. It's when you got into the open, things were happening in all directions that you wanted
yes.
highly trained soldiers.
So no particular first impressions of Happy Valley, your first
no,
posting?
No, no, that was merely, you see, it was the transport lines, and I was anxious to get up to the unit, which was then fighting, and I didn't get, and they came back eventually and picked me up, and then we went off up to Arras, a quiet part of the line, where we...
You said at the Happy Valley you were in reserve here.
Well, no, not in reserve. It was the transport lines where everything that the battalion left behind when it went into battle was put there, including people, reinforcements coming up. They all stayed there.
Well, what was your function here?
Oh, just waiting. Just waiting until the unit came back and we would join the unit.
I see.
But we couldn't go... wandering about the place.
Any particular incidents occur there?
No, I can't remember any.
Any interesting people you met?
No.
Okay. I think the next part of the front that you moved to was Béthune, in the Arras sector. Were the conditions here very different from Happy Valley?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Somme was in perpetual state of battle fighting. And the rest of the line was what we called the quiet parts, and there was nothing except the occasional raid, which wasn't very often, and otherwise it was quite a peaceful...
At Béthune, could you describe what kind of conditions you were living under?
Oh, very pleasant conditions. It was the summer, and everything was very nice and warm, and... The line was quite quiet. We had comfortable dugouts, and occasionally went out on patrol and had a bit of excitement. Generally speaking, it was a pleasant rest from the Somme, what it was meant to be.
Yes. So this was one of the quiet sectors of the front. Would it be possible for you to describe for me what a typical day would involve? The routine, the average day, for a frontline trench
position. It's gone so long ago that I don't think I can. You had inspections. As the officer in charge of your platoon, you had to be around seeing men were all on duty. They all had their duties, some resting, some at sentry go, some improving a trench, some making wire obstacles. That was one of the chief jobs, making wire obstacles, filling in wire that got broken, or because the wire fences in front of the line were very, very complicated. And we used to make new saps, work sap forward, getting a little bit of extra height or something like that, and defend that little area with wire, things like that. And then, of course, there were the ordinary process of looking after yourself. In the rain, you got very wet and uncomfortable, and all you had to be dried out. And indeed, trench feet was one of the most unpleasant diseases of trench warfare.
Yes, yes.
And the other one, of course, were the lice. You were covered in lice, and many men spent all the time in the warmth and the light trying to delouse themselves.
Were lice a common problem throughout the year, or were they worse in some seasons than others?
Oh, they were pretty well constant.
They were.
And you had delousing stations behind the lines, which you went through, and all your kit and uniform and everything else was put through these things, and you were deloused.
Yes.
But it was the most unpleasant. That and the rats were the most unpleasant things.
Your first attack on the Somme front took place shortly after your Béthune posting. But I've forgotten where and when that was.
Oh, we went back to the Somme in October. September, October. And the attack that we took part in was on the 12th of October, near the Butte de Warlencourt. Ligny Tilloy and Libarque, three villages behind the line.
That must have been a very memorable occasion. Could you describe for me the experience of that attack?
It was an unfortunate attack. It was meant to come off some time in the morning, and it was postponed, and eventually it came off at 2:15, and we had to attack up a reverse slope where we were quite protected from the Boche, and then over the top of the hill the Boche had his lines down there, and the Boche had a very powerful machine gun barrage rigged up, and the preliminary bombardment apparently didn't disturb it. And the result was we attacked in four lines, one after the other, and as each one went over the top, it got caught in this machine gun barrage and pretty well wiped out. And I was in the last line and found myself the only man on his feet as far as I could see, so I got down into a hole and stayed there till it was dark. how I wasn't hit in that attack, I never can remember. I had bullets through my hat. I had a belt with a pistol, and a bullet had gone inside the belt and out through the buckle. Through my trousers, all over the place, and I've been touched. It was the dry they were driven.
Could we start off now in November 1916, you joined the Heavy Branch Machine Gun Corps. I'd be interested in learning, first of all, the circumstances of your joining. How did it happen?
A notice came round saying that officers with infantry experience were required to transfer to the Heavy Branch Machine Gun Corps. And that's all there was in it. It didn't tell you what the Heavy Branch Machine Gun Corps was or what it was supposed to do or anything else. And my company commander said, look, here's a thing which you might like to go to, because it'll be interesting, a new thing, and might be worth your having a look at. So I said, all right, I'll go. And in due course, I was sent down to join the 4th Battalion of the Heavy Branch Machine Gun Corps, which was being raised on that particular day, which was the 30th of November, 16. And I reported to them, and
where was this? Where did you report?
I reported to headquarters, which I think was a place called Erin, and then I was sent to join number 10 company, which was at Blangy-sur-Ternoise, a few miles away. Mm.
When you got to Blangy, could you describe in some detail what the 10th company consisted of in terms of men and equipment? What was there?
I really can't tell you in detail what they were. It consisted of four sections, each of, I think at that time, four tanks. May have been three, I'm not quite sure. And a company headquarters with a reconnaissance officer and a workshop officer and a small workshop staff. That, I think, was the composition. The tanks were the old Mark I tank with the tail chopped off it. They found it was useless. And various small gadgets fitted.
We're concentrating on Blangy. Exactly what did you train with there?
Yes. Well, at Blangy, our training was, again, individual training. In theory, mechanical training for the handling of the vehicles and gunnery training for the handling of the weapons. And tactical training for the handling of the sections. That was the theory of it. And we had the weapons, they existed, not in the tanks, but on mountings in the training area. And we had the... we hadn't got the vehicles, they were all in workshops, being teed up for the next battle.
What did you have?
Well, we had made up mock tanks out of Hessian and wood, which we carried about and pretended they were tanks. And otherwise, for our technical training, we went across to, I think it was Bermicorps, where the headquarters was, where they had a stripped-down tank in a marquee. But it was a very, very cold winter, and it was all frozen up. We never removed the thing at all.
Before we go on to Bermicorps, let's stick with Blangy a little longer and see if we can get a few more detail about the training there. The tactical training that you mentioned, it consisted of what? How to move in formation?
How to move in formation when you were moving from one place to the other. And
what was the theory
how
there?
How to tackle trenches. And the theory behind it was that you should precede the infantry as soon as the artillery barrage had lifted and operate against any enemy you could see with your machine guns and occasionally with your 4-6-pounder guns in order to give the infantry that final chance to get into the trenches, the enemy trenches. That was the theory of it. And it was very difficult to do. I never succeeded in doing it in accordance with the book ever.
And dealing with trenches, how was that arranged?
Well, that was one of the big problems because the Germans had got wise to the fact these tanks could cross the normal trench. And in the Hindenburg Line, which is his main defence in 1917, he had made very large trenches, which, in fact, the tank could not cross. It tipped into it and landed on its nose and couldn't get out. And it was to overcome that they produced these fascines, big bundles of wood, which they carried on their top and dropped into the trench, which gave them a pediment to get out.
Yes.
But that was all later on.
Sure.
This was much earlier than that.
Well, staying with Blangy for the moment, were there any incidents of particular interest that took place during this first period of training?
No, I don't think so.
Any personalities there that you remember?
Not really. company commander was a fellow called Rock Ward, who used to play for England and the Harlequins.
What was he like to work with?
He wasn't very popular. He was a great big chap, and he was trying to be a bit hard, I think. Mm-hmm. He was streets better than we were at all sorts of things.
So after this, is there anything else about Blangy in terms of your first introduction to tanks?
Well, there was that and the training in the gunnery, that was all done chiefly indoors. Care and maintenance of weapons and loading and unloading.
Let's move on to the second part of your tank training. This was at tank headquarters at Burmey Corps.
The mechanical side, was it?
Yes. Tell me about this centre. How was that organised and equipped? Can you remember it?
I can only remember that the actual machine on which we were trained was a stripped-down tank in a marquee, and it couldn't work because everything was frozen up.
How do you mean everything was frozen up?
Well, I mean, it had gone in there when it was wet, and all the tanks, tracks and everything else were frozen solid in the bore in the mud. And it never, during my time, ever got out of it. And we didn't, in fact, we started up the engine and took it to bits and knew all about it, and the transmission, but we didn't actually drive the machine at all. Mm-hmm. It didn't move. And that didn't come along until a short time before we were supposed to be ready to go into the battle.
During this period that we're discussing, did you get to meet and to know any of the tank pioneers, people like Fuller and Martel?
Not then. I met Q Martel at this time. Martel was a great boxer, very good indeed. A great amateur boxer, and he was keen to get a fight, and he used to come around and say, have you got any boxers? And he'd take on any pros or anything like that. I had a chap called Carpenter in my company who was a very good pro, and he fixed up a fight with Hugh Martel for him. That was my introduction to him. I got to know Hugh Martel very, very well.
Let's talk about him then. What kind of chap was he?
He was a magnificent young officer, but I'm afraid to say that as he got more senior and more senior, he got less good and less good. That was my opinion of him. He was a most awfully nice chap. And he started life, as far as we were concerned, at headquarters, Burmey Corps, where he was GSO 2. And then when the war ended, he came home and he went back to his original corps, the Royal Engineers. And he came down to Christchurch here with the first bridging company of the Royal Engineers. And I got to know him very well there indeed. Mm-hmm.